join me in welcoming our speaker today, Ralph White from Los Angeles.
Ralph White, I'm an alcoholic. And this morning, we're going to be going over step three. Made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. I'm glad we read chapter 5, because chapter 5, at least the beginning of chapter 5, that portion leads up to that third step. You know, personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that I'm alcoholic and cannot manage my own life. Step one, the problem. If I don't know what the problem is, I don't need a solution. You know, step one is the problem. You know, B, that probably no human power could relieve my alcoholism. Leads me to the solution. I need a power that's bigger than me. I don't have a problem. I don't need a solution. And see that God could and would if He were sought. Then it says, being convinced, we were at step three. Being convinced, which tells me that steps one and two are conclusions I draw based on my experience. Am I convinced? And then it talks about in that step, the first requirement is that I be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. If running my life on my will is successful, don't even bother with step three. Have at it. Keep doing what it is I'm doing. You know, I'm not one of these people that talks about the process and talks about the steps because it's written down in the book and it's something that we do. And it's not homework assignment. It's not get an A in AA. It's not any of that. For me, you know, I came into these rooms because my life was a train wreck. You know, I had some things, I had achieved some things, I had accomplished some things. And if you're an alcoholic like me, all that means is you had a lot to lose, and I had lost them all. You know, I was working in management in the law department of a major utility. Was my last job before I came the first time. And when we read this third step and we read the description and we talk about, you know, our actor, you know, very much an actor, and I so identify with that because I was the kind of guy, this ain't the first time I wore suits and I wore ties. You know, it is one of the first times in my life you won't see me in the same one tomorrow that I was in today. You know, I was accustomed to going to work like that, the actor. You know, I'm the corporate guy by day, and I'm a zombie, and I'm living the life by night. You know, and I'm real familiar with that kind of deal, you know. And so looking back on my experience, you know, the whole deal in Alcoholics Anonymous is a retrospective. It's a looking back. You know, I can't, and most of what it is that I see, it's a looking back experience. And when they wrote the book, it was in a looking back way. The book is not a theoretical, you know, piece of literature. The reason I like it so much is it's practical, and it's based on practical experience. It's not based on a bunch of theories. Some guys didn't have a hypothesis that if we do this, then let's do this. Now let's do a scientific test. Let's have this control group who doesn't do the 12 steps, and let's do this group that does do. No. They didn't have a book when they first came. People always talk about, let's go back and do it the way the first 100 did it. Well, if we did that, we'd be doing it without a book. We'd be doing it with some spiritual writings. We'd be doing it with some other texts. But looking back, you know, looking back from what happened from 1935 to the time they started writing the book, you know, they said, wait a minute. These are the things that we found in common that we did. And so they started with that, and it's a looking back experience. And when I look back on the evidence of my life drinking, you know, one fact gets real clear to me. Yeah, I'm an alcoholic. You know, I read the definition of alcoholism, read what it is that Dr. Silkworth came up with, and it explained things that had been unexplainable to me. You know, I'm not a doctor, and so I couldn't scientifically account for what Dr. Silkworth was talking about when he talked about this allergy of the body. But it explained things that had been unexplainable. I like when the line in the doctor said, explained things for which I couldn't otherwise account. You know, my wife used to say, how come you spend all your paycheck every 2 weeks? You know, how come you can't bring a dime home? And I'd raise up and I'd be pissed off. And behind my mask, I'd be thinking, how come I can't bring a dime home? You know? And that doctor's opinion that we have an allergy that sets off something in Ralph when I take one, it explained things for which I couldn't otherwise account. So it made sense to me. And I like that kind of writing. You know, so when I get to that first step and I took a look at my life, life unmanageable, there's a definition of it that goes beyond just the obvious stuff. I couldn't keep any money, didn't have a bank, didn't have a driver's license, didn't have anywhere to stay, didn't have a key to anybody's house, all that kind of stuff. But then it talked about a little bit later on some definitions of unmanageability. You know, I couldn't control my emotional nature. You know, I couldn't keep a job, wasn't of value to anybody else, you know. So those definitions really worked for me. So I got in touch with that. And then I got in touch with that final thing when it talked about that step one experience. And I know we're talking about three, but I can't talk about three without one and two. Because step three is the gateway. Step one is the problem. Step two is the solution. 3 through 12 are the 10-step program of action to get me into that solution. You know, step two, you know, came to believe a power greater than me could restore me to sanity. That's the solution, and that was a process for me. And we could do a whole thing on getting to, you know, do I now believe or am I even willing to believe? That was the place I came from. I was raised in church, you know, but even though I was raised in church, the thing I found out is I didn't have a conception. I didn't have a conception of a power. Most people don't. Most people don't come in the world able to conceive of something like that. Because so most people, with everything, with any idea, most of us are not bright enough to come up with some original thought about something. So most of us have something impressed on us by other people, whatever the idea is, whatever it is. So this conception of God was not an original one. So I brought in some preconceived ideas because I was raised in the church. And at 16 years old, I said, you won't have to worry about Ralph White darkening the doors of anybody's church anymore. You know, came up in the 60s. You know, and I was one of those kind of guys, religion, opiate of the people, you know, that's to keep people down. You need that, you weak, grandma, you know, that's cool. But you're not as slick and you're not as cool and you're not as savvy and you're not as educated as I am. And so that's why you need to be there. You know, and I like that part in the book when it talks about step two. Be quick to see where religious minded people have been living useful lives. You see, all this shit I'm talking to my grandmother and my grandfather, but who was holding their hand out to who for money? I'm always at their doorstep asking for their help. I'm the one that's slick. I'm the one that's savvy. I'm the one that's intelligent. I'm the one that's educated. So then I started looking at that, and that's it. And the chapter to the agnostic is my favorite chapter, you know, and that it's a whole chapter on it. I call it the spiritual kindergarten, and it's a whole chapter on, you know, coming in touch and forming this conception of this power. Now, once I get the conception of the power, once I ask myself, do I now believe or am I willing to believe, what am I going to do with it? I need to put something in action. Third step, made a decision to turn my will, which is my thinking, and my life, which is my actions, over to the care of God as I understood it. You know, and that's a big one. That's a big one. The first requirement is I be convinced that my life, run on my will, can hardly be a success. What's going to convince me of that? Look at the evidence. Just look at the evidence. I ain't got to, you know, it's not a hard deal for a guy named Ralph. You know, I've been running my life, you know, on my will for a long time. And so when the book talks about just what do we, over to the care guys, we understood them. Just what do we mean by that and just what do we do? Turning my will and life over to the care of God as I understood them. What do we mean by that and what do we do? On page 62, that question is on page 60. There's a succinct answer on page 62, and there's some other stuff that goes before that. But the answer is, this is the how and the why of it. This is how I turn my life over to the care of God as I understand it. This is why I turn my life over to the care of God as I understand it. You know, we had to quit playing God. That's how I do it. Well, why? Didn't work. Love this book. You know, it ain't nothing. It's nothing virtuous about that, that you should have no other God before. I mean, you know, the Bible says that, ooh, it's not a good thing to have play God because God says in the commandments, no. Quit playing God, Ralph White. Shit don't work. Don't work. Okay, we can get to the moral virtues of that and we can get to, you know, the rest of that later on down the line. But for you, as a starting point, it doesn't work. You playing God doesn't work. What are you talking about? What is this deal about? I had to quit playing God. It didn't work. How do I play God anyway? I play God whenever I want anybody or anything to be other than what it is. Now, I could want it for a good reason. You know, it talks about this actor. Then later on, now it talks about the first requirement. Now it's going to give me some stuff, you know. On the first requirement is I be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. My life, run on my will, can hardly be a success. Why not? Because on that basis, I'm almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though my motives are good. Okay. Why you say that, Ralph? Well, we in a relationship. We get in one, we cool. We do the courting thing, we do the dating thing, we get together. Inevitably, Ralph shows up. Showed up at the beginning, but I kind of subdue and suppress who I am for a minute. You know, and all of a sudden, some stuff that was cool ain't cool no more. You know. You really have to smoke them cigarettes, right? This small example. You know, you really want to smoke those cigarettes? Your mouth tastes like an ass. Now I get more and more graphic with it. You know, I don't need to, you know. And so, but I'm stuck in this changing you because what? Cigarettes kill. Cancer's not good for you. I'm really looking out for you, right? So even though, but what if you ain't ready to stop? You ain't ready to stop. It doesn't matter that I'm ready for you. You're not ready. So on that basis, now we in what? Collision. Even though my motives are right, I'm in collision with somebody or something. I say something out of line. You say something because I step on your toes and you retaliate. Next thing you know, it's on. Small example. That's how Ralph runs his life. That's the fabric of my life. Boss don't say stuff right. People don't say stuff. Well, wait a minute. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like the actor who wants to run the whole show. It's forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, the rest of the players. If his only his arrangements would stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, our actor may sometimes be quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But as with most humans, he is more likely to have varied traits. I'm Denzel, right? I'm Denzel. And I like this example because that's me in my life, you know. And so I'm an actor, you know. And this is the cool thing about being the actor. I'm the actor. Not only am I in the show, right, but now I'm directing the rest of you guys. And you, wait. The lights, put the light man, you know, I need more light on me over here. Scenery, set director, I'm running around here doing everything, right? And the rest of you guys are in the play too, and you like, did somebody tell his ass he ain't, we got a director already, you know, and so I'm running around. And the cool thing about being the actor and being the director and being the script man and being the set man and being the best boy and being the key girl and being all that, the cool thing about it, when I'm the actor, I'm always the leading man. And I don't know that in your play, I just got a bit role. So I'm sitting up here, you know, and so all of us, that's why in collision with folk all the time. Just think about that example he's given. Just think about, and Bill talks about later on, he talks about thereafter in this drama of life. That's going to be in the Thursday Promises. So he keeps this analogy going about, think about this like my life is, and we all know about drama. We all know we create enough of it. But he talks about hereafter in this drama of life. So think about it. Think about my life, and think about me being an actor in this play that is my life. And the thing about this play that is my life, Ralph is always the leading man. Unfortunately, I'm reining you guys, and right now, you guys are, you know, and your part, so that you know it, is to sit up and look attentive, nod appropriately, laugh at my jokes, you know, and that's the part you're supposed to play. And when you don't play your part, I kind of get into, okay, I need to see why that guy's just sitting back there stone-faced. That ain't working for me right now. You ain't doing yours real well, you know. But so that's the drama, you know. So in life, all my interaction, you know, so I come home, you know, and this third step, we're going to talk about why it gets so important. This third step, you know, medicine, what I start thinking, because you're not saying your lines like, you're not doing your part right, you're not doing it the way I think you should be doing it, you know, and so I get frustrated, and I get disappointed in my life. And I think to myself, if only I managed better, everybody would be happy. See, because I'm a virtuous guy. I'm not just thinking of myself. I know better than that. I want this for you. I want this for the whole family. I want everybody to be okay. If only I managed better. I got a son, stepson, 29 years old. What's the day? Saturday. Tuesday he was at my house. Walked in the house. The hell are you doing here? He had been calling me on the phone and I hadn't been taking his call. See, because the backstory to this is this young man has been, he started out really drinking and in the last year he started smoking. He went in the program 2 months ago. And since our recovery programs, the door swing both ways, he walked out. They wasn't doing it his way. He wants to come back to where he thinks he's got safe harbor. Can't do it like that. If it's going to be anybody raising havoc in my house, this is the only alcoholic that'll be doing it. Can't do it like that. You need to know the next program you get in, that's where you live. You can't come here and wash clothes. You can't come here and make calls. You can't come here and eat meals. You need to know that's where you live. And maybe you'll stay. Got him in another one. A good friend of mine ran it. 4 days later, they put him out of that one. Because he was doing what we talk about right now. Writing the script. Telling them who his daddy was and who his uncles were, and they got this much time sober, and he thinking he gonna roll on that as if that's got some clout for him in a damn recovery home, you know. Man, we ain't trying to hear who your dad. You need to be up in here when you take a pass. Anyway, you see I'm going somewhere with that. They put him out. Steal some piece in the translation is missing when it's, you can't come back here. Pops back on my porch. Got him in the third place. Pops back up. What if your roommates, I'm like, oh, here we go. Left out. So this past Tuesday, in my house, well, where are we going with this? And you know, in the third step, you know, let go and let God. If only I manage better, then everybody will be happy. You know, and I can't, and the thing about the third step, turning my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand it. I need new management and I need a new manager. You know, and I need the understanding that life, and I can't wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this life just on the basis of what it is that I think I want, on the basis and the force of my personality. I cannot wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this life based on if you do what it is that I want you to do. Because sometimes you do what I want you to do, and then I don't want that, you know. Sometimes you do what I want you to do, and then I find out I didn't want that. You know, but anyway, I'm almost always in collision, even when my motives are right. I want him to be sober more than he want to be sober. I play God whenever I expect anybody or anything to be other than what it is. And that young man's got to have his own experience. And in the third step, you know, sometimes it looks different than I thought it would look. Sometimes it looks different than I thought it would look. You know, and in that experience right there and trying to arrange the set and the ballet, you know, I was directing recovery home people. I was directing sponsees of mine. Yeah, you know, dude, I'm out. You know, God, the same God that smiled on me and the same God that has a wide umbrella of grace and the same God that I found is the same God I got to trust that's looking at my son. Same God, because I can't do it. Even when my motives are right, find myself in collision with one of my sponsees, Well, did you just have to put? Yeah, he had to. They got rules down there, and they aren't different because he's my son. You know, I can't write your lines, and I can't script this differently. You know, so in the third step, you know, each person in trying to make these arrangements, I'm virtuous, I'm kind, I'm patient, I'm generous, I'm sitting here, bus pass, money, and the rest. Then I flip. Don't bring your ass up here no more. You know, now I'm pissed off because you didn't act right and you didn't do it the way I wanted you to do it. So now I'm bullying, I'm manipulating. So now the show doesn't come off. Think life doesn't treat me right. Exert myself even more. Next occasion, more demanding. Still the plate don't suit me. Now I'm self-pitying. What is my basic trouble? Am I not really a self-seeker, even when trying to be kind? Am I not a victim of the delusion that I can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if only I manage well? Check this out. Most of that transaction, I wasn't really concerned with what he was going through. I was concerned with what I was going through. I'm not really concerned about whether or not you heard, and I'm concerned with don't make me worry. Don't bring me bad news. You know, I don't need that on mine. So am I not a victim of the delusion that I can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this life if I manage better? If I manage better. Step three is a scary process for a person like me that grows up. We live in a paradox. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous is kind of a paradoxical world. If you ever play ball, guys, you grow up thinking you never give up. You know, when in your competitive juices, well, you don't give up. You know, and you grow up, if you've been successful in any pursuit and you've been successful in life, you grow up with a level of self-sufficiency and self-reliance, and that's considered an asset. That's considered an admirable trait. You know, that I have to make things happen and I'm a make it happen guy. So in Alcoholics Anonymous, the notion of letting go, that whole idea of something outside and beyond myself. And what if the prospects of what it is that's for me is not what I think I want for me? You know, so this third step, when we stand on the threshold of taking that third step prayer, you know, it's really scary when I think about it. Am I not a victim of the delusion? Is it not evident to the rest of the players that this is what I want? And do my actions make each one of them want to retaliate? Am I not, even in my best moments, a producer of confusion rather than harmony? Even at my best, when I'm running on self-will, when I'm imposing my will on you, when I'm imposing what I think is best for you. Because guess what? You got a hand in that too. And you have an idea what you think is best for you. And what you think is best for you, you pretty much are going to roll with more so than what I think is best for you. So we almost always are in collision with other people when I'm running on self-will. And that's even at my best. Think about family relationships. Think about close relationships. Think about father-son relationship. Think about your kids or think about your mate. Almost always in the workplace. But I'm just looking out for you. But I'm just thinking about you. Well, goddamn it, let me think about myself. Why don't you get you some business? You know, that's the, you know. And so I'm always retaliating. And so that's the third step. You know, selfishness, self-centeredness. That is the root of our trouble. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that at some time in the past we've made decisions based on self, which later put us in a position to be hurt. Whew! Most freeing sentence in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, comes next. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. What's so freeing about that? If the problem is in me, guess what? The solution is in me. If I had to wait for you to get better, for me to get better, I'd be in good big trouble. Our problems, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, although I don't even usually think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. Above everything else. Above everything. And I got a lot of fears. I got a lot of, you know, I got a lot of, above everything, we must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us, with an exclamation point. Can't do it by myself. God makes that possible. Gateway to the third step. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us have moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help. Anybody ever stand up, be going through something? You know, I could be going through something like I am with my son. I'm going through something in the house right now, my personal relationship, you know, and I don't know whether we're going to make it through this next year or not, you know. And I could be going through something, and I can get out and go to a meeting, and I can talk to you guys. And we'll stand out in the parking lot, and I'll be talking to Carl, and I'll be like, okay, man, this is, and we'll come up with some stuff, because we come up with stuff in parking lots at Alcoholics Anonymous. We find out our answers, and they be true answers, because what I learned is, me by myself, Sister B said something when I was in my first year of recovery. I went to the Las Vegas Roundup, and Sister B was speaking, and she said, God and me alone cannot keep me sober, and I found that so profound. God and me alone, because a lot of people talk about and get it confused when we talk about, but our real reliance must be on a power greater than myself. And some people think that means eliminate you guys from the transaction. That's not at all what that means. That's not at all what that means. You know, it talks about our real reliance must be on a power greater than ourselves. So that must mean I ain't got to have no, you know, I don't need a relationship with you guys. You know, no. That ain't what that necessarily means. I got a 13-year-old daughter and I have a 25-year-old daughter. And sometimes when I'm gone, I give my 25-year-old daughter, you know, enough money to take care of them and to go out and to do some stuff on the weekend. And so my 25-year-old daughter takes my 13-year-old daughter out. And she buys her stuff and they go shopping and they go and they do the transaction. And so my 13-year-old daughter feels like, and she relies on my 25-year-old daughter. She relies on her to, you know, to take care of paying for them to get in and to take care of the shopping and the rest. But my 25-year-old daughter, even though she's the one that's paying for all this, that's not the source of the money. The source came from her daddy. You know, but my 13-year-old daughter don't have to worry about that. She's just getting it from the 25-year-old. And sometimes I look at them and my daddy like that. He does that through some of you guys for me. You know, so I have to have that in the transaction. And the other thing I learned for myself is I don't find God by myself. It's not a solitary, you know, search for me. Sometimes I can. But we're talking about 11 later on. But most of the time, he shows up as a third party for me. Because when I roll by myself, I feel by myself, and I feel alone sometimes. And I feel overwhelmed in my life. And I feel like life gets too heavy for me. And I feel like sometimes I just want to lay in the bed and pull the covers up. And I'm in a valley right now in my life where I can't necessarily see the way out. But I've been in valleys before, and that's the good news. That's the good news. I've been in valleys before. And I always know when I come on the other side, I've grown in the valley. So I know I'm growing here. And I know there's something for me here. But I'm in it right now. And I don't find my gratitude till I stand up in front of you guys and I hear myself say what I say. Because God shows up in this transaction. And so when I stand out with one of you guys and I do the sharing, real stuff takes place. Real answers come up that don't come up by myself. So me and Carl in the parking lot and I'm sharing with him and I'm sharing and I'm like, man, she's tripping and this is going on and I'm just, you know, I swear to God. And we talk and then you say, you know what? I'm going to go home. And today I'm going to try to be kind and I'm going to try to be patient and I'm going to try to be loving and I'm not going to come in with an attitude. Anybody ever do that? And you fired up when you leave the meeting. I got a new attitude like the song and I go home and I hit the front door and I say, you know, okay, baby, look at me. And it's gone just like that. Gone. and I can't make myself not go there. And I swore I'm not going there, right? And I come in the house, I see my son. I remember when we were going through some stuff, and his ass is on that couch. And as much as I said, I'm gonna talk to him man to man, but I swear to God, man, we're gonna have a talk. And I see him laid out on the couch playing them games, it's gone. Can't stop myself from going there. We got any other people who can't stop yourself from going there? You know, that's why it talks about self can't overcome self. And it often seems no way of doing it without God's aid. That's what we're talking about. Self can't overcome self. That I can't get rid of this selfishness because I want it, because I think it, because I wish it, because I desire it. That ain't enough to do it. You know, so that's what we're talking about. Standing on the threshold of step three. Standing on, I need new management. I need something that can do for me what I can't do for myself. But I got to be convinced that my life run on my will can't be a success. So I look at that, I look at that, I look at that. I look at the evidence of it, you know. And so now I get to the point where, okay, I give. I give. I clearly see it. I'm in collision with people all the time. I can't overcome myself. I can't make myself stop going to depression. I can't make myself stop going to frustration. I can't make myself stop going to panic and anxiety. I can't make myself stop doing and taking actions based on the frustration, thinking that if I make it happen, I can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this life by the force of my will. By the fact that we can have moral and philosophical convictions galore. I always was a good guy. I was raised with values. I was raised not to take anything. It's amazing when you're in the life how the line starts moving with what you won't do. First is, I never steal. Then it's, I would never take anything from anybody that I know. Then it's, I never take anything from my family. Then it's, well, I know I would never take anything from my little girl. And the line keeps moving and moving and moving and moving. It wasn't about not having the philosophical convictions. It wasn't about not having. I didn't have the power. I didn't have the power. Some people say, there used to be a saying, if I knew better, I would have done better. That ain't true for me. I knew better. I didn't have the power. Did not have the power to not do even when I know not to do it. Still like that sometime right now. I need power. Need power. So when I get to that third step, that's what we're talking about. You know, tapping into this source of power that can do for me. Because my life, I need new management. Ralph running his life on his will keeps me in collision with other people. And I make decisions based on self that later on put me in position to be hurt. Everything I go through, all the stuff I'm going through right now, based on decisions based on self, later put me in position to be hurt. I was homeless once before in recovery. And I'm verging on it right now. You know, I'm upside down. I'm real crazy. And decisions based on self this time too. Decisions based on self. Because I say stuff to myself that come from a good place. From a good motive. But it still verges, but there's still an element of dishonesty, and there's still an element of playing God. And there's still an element of decisions based on self that later put me in position to be hurt. Don't always think they come from a bad motive. Don't always think they come from a bad motive. Got in over my head. Bought. Good motive. My family deserved to live like that. Good motive. Good motive. Deserved to live like that. Okay, now if you're anything like me, now opportunity presents itself that I can get this. Oh, okay. Must be God's will. My desire meets opportunity. That's God's will. You know, people say that all the time, you know. I see her across the room. I sure would like to get at her, you know. That's my desire. Next thing you know, we sitting next to each other at the meeting and she's giving me her number. That's God's will. My, you know, opportunity meets desire. Ralph's world, that's God's will, you know. No, that's my will, you know. But anyway, I had this opportunity, you know, and I'm in the business so I could do some stuff. Now, when we talk about a manner of living that demands rigorous honesty, that'll get clearer and clearer and clearer and clearer and clearer and clearer and clearer as I stay on the road of recovery. And it'll have more meaning for me when it talks about rigorous honesty. Because dishonesty does not always come from a bad place. Dishonesty is dishonesty, whatever it is. So I get in this loan and I'm in the business and I don't make that kind of, you know, and it was at a time when, okay, and I could say what I meant, okay. And I didn't make enough money, to every month come up with this number. But I had it then. And then I was in a good run, and okay. And then here's the thing about dishonesty. Sometimes it starts with a kernel of truth. And the kernel of truth is this. Well, you know, when you take something on, you the kind of guy that just makes you step your hustle up. That makes you work harder. You know, yeah, you don't have it right now, but that's the kind of thing that makes you. And there's a kernel of truth in that. But the honesty is when you sign in these papers saying I can give you this amount of money every month. Your ass was not, that was not honest. You couldn't, you know. So now stuff turns around and oops, decisions based on self. I want this. I can get it. I'll deal with how I get it later on. Give it to me. Decisions based on self that later put me in position to be hurt. You know, I love the fact that I can find the freedom in. There's never anything that happens to me. Oh, I would be so, man, that would be the scariest thing in the world if I felt like I was always, you know, victim to circumstances and it's just some stuff that's beyond me and stuff happens to people. Oh, I couldn't get up. I love the fact that this book, when this line is in there, and it's not in there, and that's not what makes it true. It's true, and that's why it's in there. Because most of my troubles have always been as a result of me making decisions based on self that put me in position to be hurt. I've either done something to one of you guys and you retaliate, I step on your toes, or I do some stuff. And I find out in retrospect what it is that happened. So I have to run to this deal. I have to run because I have to be rid of this selfishness or it will kill me. Many of us have, you know, and I seems no way of getting rid of it without his aid. Next, we decided in this hereafter of life, God was going to be our director. He's the principal. We are his agents. He's the father. We are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom. When we sincerely took up such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. The third step promises. We had a new employer. Being all powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. I like the fact that they say our little plans and designs. What kind of, oh Bill, who told you that? My plans and designs are grand. No, Ralph, get right. They're just your little, you know. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoy peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of its presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or hereafter. We were reborn. We were now at step three. Step three, and it says we thought long and hard before taking this spiritual step. Spiritual actions have spiritual consequences. I'm not a person that gets scared of that because I'm having spiritual consequences even if I don't take the action. The thing about the third step, though, is I get aware of what it is that's taking place in my life. I get a greater awareness of the havoc that I'm wreaking. I can start making a causal relationship between what I'm doing and what I'm getting. Now, before, I was kind of walking around in ignorance, so I don't even always notice it. If you prefer to stay in ignorance, don't take step three, but keep on living that life that's going to be in heaven. You know, and there are some spiritual consequences for taking those kind of spiritual actions. You know, and I get an awareness of what it is that's going on with me. And I get a much more heightened awareness of the havoc that I'm wreaking in my own life. Get a much more heightened awareness of that. And step three, you know, I take it as a group every year. Do it every year. You know, and in that step it says, God, I offer myself to you to build with me and to do with me as you will. You guys, a lot of you heard my story, such as it was. And, you know, when we tell our stories, we give an abbreviated version of it, you know. So, you know, my whole story is one of having and losing and having and losing. You know, in an abbreviated fashion, it may seem like, oh, man, it was just all bad. You know, I had achieved and accomplished some stuff. I built up a bright outlook for a family. You know, I had a bright outlook for myself. I thought I'd be doing something in politics, and I thought I'd be a millionaire before I was 30 years old. And I had some big dreams and goals and hopes and ambitions, you know, and at the end, by the time alcohol had finished having its way with me, all that had been replaced. And I came from a real, real, real low place. I came from a place of uselessness and worthlessness. Came from a place of walking with no purpose and no hope. You know, and that's a cold thing to lose, walking with no hope. So when I get to that third step, in the condition that I am when I first confront that third step, that's a powerful thing. God, I offer myself to you. Well, what is this thing? When I'm coming on the third step, I might not already have this form conception of God. Okay. That's why the third step is a decision. And it's a stepping on faith. Stepping on faith. Faith precedes action. Knowledge, trust, follow action. Faith precedes action. I take a step out. I don't know what is going to happen. And most of the time I take a step out like that because there's something that gives me or that buttresses that faith. And usually what supports that kind of faith in a step that's scary, as I've seen it happen in a lot of other people, two things that buttress it. One is my experience of operating without it. I don't know what I'm going to get operating with it, but I'm sure what I'm going to get operating without it. And that's the propeller for me. You know, I don't know about anybody else. That's what propelled me in the steps. I didn't know what was waiting on me on this side, but I knew what was waiting on me on that side, and I was tired of it. I had done that negative second step. Before I did the second step, came to believe in a power greater than me, I had done that negative part of the second step. I had come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as I had been living. I had come to believe that my life was nothing, was going to continue to be nothing, and was going to continue to go down slow. I come to believe in that, and I wanted something different. I wanted something different. So I dove into this, not because I had an idea of what was waiting on me. And it was scary. God, I offer myself to you to build with me and to do with me as you will. Hold up. What if you want to put me in a white polyester suit and have me preaching on the corner on Sunday? What? I'm not, you know. And that's, you know, when I do the third step, if I think long and hard about it, those are some legitimate concerns because I'm sitting up here thinking, I'm turning my will and my life over to the care of this God, and I don't know what he's going to want me to be. What is he going to turn me into? Check this out. How many parents we got in here? Okay, we got some parents. How many people have more than one child? Okay, we got more than one. Now, I have kids. I'm a frustrated ball player. You know, and I could want my son to come up and play ball, or I could want my daughter, you know. I got a daughter that wanted to be a veterinarian. She's in law school right now. And then I got a 13-year-old daughter that idolizes her sister. And up until last week, she said she was going to law school to be a lawyer. Last week, she decided she's going to be an actress. We saw a movie. She really is. She did a thing at school, and she played Diana Ross, and she really got good. So she wants to be an actress and the rest of that. I'm daddy. Love my girls. And my girls say, okay, Dad, we're going to follow what it is, a path that you lay out for us. Forming a conception of God, and the way I form a conception of God, sometimes I got to use human stuff for me to work backwards and form my conception, right? Okay, Dad. Now, Daddy doesn't want his girls to do certain things because it does something for me, because it gratifies me. Daddy traffic cops in their life because if you guys do this, you won't collide with each other, and you both and everybody in the house will be happy. You know, because, and see, some daddies have a whole bunch of kids that do a bunch of colliding. So if there are some things that Daddy sets down that the kids follow, it's not for Daddy, it's for the kids. It'll maximize all these kids being able to live happy, joyous, and free. It's not for the daddy, it's for the kids, right? And so with my girls, when they, if they say, I'm going to turn my will and life over your care, do you? I'm not going to tell my girls, no, Rain, I don't want you to be a lawyer. I want you to be a damn surgeon, and I don't care what it is. You've turned it over to me. No, I want you to be the best you can be. And when I go into the third step, God ain't going to make Ralph be, he ain't going to make Ralph be Paul. He ain't going to make Ralph be, you know, anybody in this room. He ain't going to make him be Chris. He's going to let Ralph be the best Ralph. be the best Ralph. Now, if you choose, and see, if you come from where I come from, the white polyester suit preaching on the corner was still preferable to the things I was doing on Sunday morning. So I really don't know why I was tripping, you know, but I'm just saying, even then, you know. So I, you know, and I started thinking about that, and I started thinking about my conception of this power, and I started thinking about God. He's going to make me the best me inside of who I am. So I said, okay, God, I offer myself to you to build with me and to do with me as you will. And check this out. Because the third step talks about turning my will and life over to the care of God, as I understand it. And a lot of people think, okay, I'm turning my life over to God. I'm giving my life to God, and God is, okay. We talk about having a new manager in the minute. Anybody in here got a little money? Some money, right? No. I guess y'all heard about my story of woe and said, I ain't letting him know. He don't put the, I'm not going to ask for none. No, this is just for the example. So I have a little money. And I want to grow my money, right? Anybody in there want to grow their money? Yeah, you want to grow my money. So there are people who grow money. And I don't mean it in that sense. I mean investment advisors, financial people. And I give my money to somebody in here because I know you're a financial advisor. You're an investment guy, right? So I give you my money. And I say, okay. And you tell me, Ralph, you can get X percent investment. Okay, so I give it to you, right? Whose money is it? Whose money is it? It's my money, right? You have it. E.F. Hutton have it, or, you know, Sherman, whoever have it, they have it. But whose money is it? It's my money. It's in what? Your care. But it ain't your money. And so when they say I turn my will and my life over to the care of God, as I understand it, it's my life. It's my life. It's my life. I've been on this road of forming this conception of this power, and when I grew up all the time, it was always this idea, oh, turn your world, turn your life over to God. And, you know, no. My daddy wants me to have my life. Do with it. I'm a umbrella to grace up over you. You live your life. I'm going to carry you, and I'm going to keep you, and I'm going to hold you, and I'm going to direct you. You live. It's your life. You know, and that's me, and that's not none of this. That's me. That's the way I conceive. Because a lot of people say that steps are ordained, and God puts this person in my life. Yeah, He puts people in my life, but I choose the role you're gonna have. I choose the role. You know, oh, He puts these situations. And no, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that God doesn't do that. No, that's not what I'm saying at all. But I believe for myself. That God has given me a life, and seem like sometimes He just want to kick back and say, I wonder what my boy going to do. Let me check him out. Let me check him out. You know, that's just my conception. You know, get a conception. God, offer myself to you to build with me and to do with me as you will. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may be able to do thy will. Take away my difficulties. Why? So victory over them may bear witness to those I would help, but thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Third step prayer, powerful prayer. It is what gives me purpose. Gives me purpose. I get up from there. Relieve you. Take away my difficulties. I have something to offer somebody. Because check this out. I'm going to always have difficulties. That's the touchstone. That's what I had to offer is experience. That's what I had to offer is experience. And every year I get down on my knees and say, take away my difficulties so victory over there may bear witness to those I would help. So sometime I'm going to have something for him to handle. And I get on my knees and check this out. I got plenty for him to handle right now. And I'll be able to share this with somebody. And I share it all the time right now. I share it all the time right now when you're living in the valley. Am I living in my life or am I living in my head? Most of the time I'm living in my head. Because when I live in my life, I'm full. When I live in my life, I'm sheltered. When I live in my life, I'm laughing. When I live in my life, I'm going through the day. But when I live in my head, I can't make it. If I start living in my head while I'm standing up here with you guys right now, I might not be able to finish. Oh, shit, when I get home, this is waiting on me. You know, I don't know what I'm at. But when I live in my life, so that third step. So I get up off my knees with this group of people. And then the final piece to that, because the third step is just a decision. And the third step can have little permanent effect unless it once followed up by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of. So there's something to do to actualize that third step, and that's 4 through 9. I got to jump on that personal inventory, and that's the culmination of the third. The third is the decision. You want to put the third in the action, got to jump into the fourth. Ready for some questions. Thank you. Questions?
Yeah, we'll take about a 5-minute break, and then we'll open it up for a question and answer. All right, now just as a reminder, we'll open this up for question and answers. And if you have a question, please raise your hand and make your questions brief and to the point. Even though it doesn't say this, it's not a time to share. And with that, let's welcome Ralph again.
He's running the show. Stand right there. Right? Is this good? Do a call. Got his directors. Yeah. Well, without knowing the exact nature of what you're talking about, when I work, and I work for somebody. Now, if somebody's not asking me to do something illegal or something unethical, and sometimes at work people ask, especially in the work I do, there's a thin line, you know, between it. But the thing about letting go and letting God is not always in the actions I take. Sometimes the letting go and letting God is in the getting out of the results business. You know, so sometimes it's I do what it is that I need to do. I do what it is that I'm instructed to do at work. And then, here's the deal. I always think if only I manage better, I'll rest satisfaction and happy. If only I manage better, everybody will like me. If only I manage better, you know, I won't be in conflict with somebody. Some people have a kind of job that requires conflict resolution or it requires being in conflict. The biggest thing for me, if you heard me share last night, you know, I'm always trapped in what I think you think about me. And so a big deal for me in this whole idea of letting go and letting God, and this whole idea of turning my will and my life over to the care of God, which is important. Sometimes I get into let go, let God, turning my will and life over to the care of God is, okay, God, you got me, period. Sometimes I'm going to be unpopular. Sometimes I'll be unpopular in the rooms. Sometimes I'll be unpopular at home. Sometimes doing the right thing don't feel right. And so when I get on this third step deal, that's why I really need to be centered in what it is I'm trying to do. What it is I'm trying to do, you know, and what it is I'm trying to do is turn my will and life over to something bigger than me. Now, in the workplace, in a limited way, I got to turn my will and life over to the person signing that paycheck in a limited sense. So I do that. But in the bigger sense, which is the personal sense, how I feel about myself, how I feel I'm going to be received, what I think people are going to think about me, that's the turning my will and life over to the care of God sense and not playing God in this situation, doing what it is that I'm supposed to do. And I don't know if that answers that specific question, but that is a guide point. It's what I use to guide me. Spiritual principles This is a little bit about Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's somewhat about the third step. It's somewhat about all the steps. Somewhat about the traditions. First tradition, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on AA unity. When I go into a room at Alcoholics Anonymous, and when I was new, I used to go. I went to speak at a meeting one time. India, shit-kicking, bikers, and I'm like, these guys ain't going to be feeling me. You know, they're not going to be feeling me at all. And I'm going up in there, and I'm rolling solo, and I'm like, and that's on any level. You know, I could go to meetings, and I went up in there, and the guys were not laughing at my jokes, and they were sitting like this. And at the end of that meeting, guys came up to me, and I was so well-received. But for me, that part really ain't that hard, because Alcoholics Anonymous, if we got anybody that's new, Alcoholics Anonymous, one of the things I like the most about our society and our fellowship is it makes me bigger than I am. Alcoholics Anonymous makes me better than I am. Alcoholics Anonymous, if I practice some principles when I walk in these doors, it'll make me bigger and better than I am. And I really love this fellowship. It gave me my life, and I don't play. I don't play when I say some stuff, and it's nothing contradictory about the way I live my life, nothing contradictory about the way I grew up. It's the closest society for me to the way, and this is outside here, so I ain't going to stay there too long, but it's the closest society to me to the way I wish life in the world was. And it makes me bigger than I am. It makes me bigger than I am. I sponsor people that I normally probably would have had prejudices about. You know, I sponsor people and I work with people. You know, I stood up with a gay woman as her best man at her wedding when she married her partner and her mate. And I didn't feel anything except what I feel when I sponsor. You know, there are lots of traits. Carl and I have been doing a lot of talking about this, and there are lots of traits to bring to sponsorship. And some people think that the trait to bring, the most important one is, am I taking you through this work? I think the most important thing an alcoholic can bring, especially to that transaction sponsorship, is I genuinely care. It'll erase a lot of mistakes. Care about somebody. Care about them. Care about them. And in these rooms, I care about them. I care about this fellowship. And I take it personally. It supersedes any personal agenda I have. It supersedes any personal thoughts I have. It supersedes. That's why we exist. That's why we exist. Because we don't have outside issues that come up in here. When I walk up in here, I'm part of one family and I'm part of one group. First name Ralph, last name Alcoholic. And when I say that, I really mean it. And when I hit a room, that's my attitude. That's my attitude. I hit a room, and that's my attitude. And God, I offer myself to you to build with me, and he's built with me, and he's done with me something. He's given me a walk with a sense of purpose. He's given me something that I can't find anywhere else. He's given me something that lets me stand up when I want to fall down. And I want to lay down right now. But he's given me something. He's given me something. A lot of people in here know what that is and sound like you do too. He's given me something. And the secret, that triangle that we talk about, now we're going all over. We got a triangle, circle and a triangle, unity, recovery, and service. And I tell you one thing that's going to hold you when nothing else will hold you. I tell you one thing that will hold you when money runs out, that will make you stand up and realize I'm rich when I don't think I have nothing. Get on that service side. There's some service soldiers up in here. There's some people that work with others and do the H&I and do the meetings. And there's some people that sit up on their Wednesday nights and they go open up a door. And they go sit with a coffee pot. And they wait for a guy named Ralph to show up. And they don't know that he's going to show up. But every Wednesday night they get up and they do it. They get up and they do it. And then they keep doing that and they keep doing that and they keep doing that and they keep doing that. And they sit and they listen to fifth steps. And they sit and they take phone calls in the middle of the night. And they stand at a meeting and they share with somebody. And I don't care who that somebody is. And before you know it, when you broke and you ain't got nothing and you ass out and you think to yourself, man, my life, all of a sudden I got something. And the something that I have is something that I never found nowhere else. So for myself, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous, standalone entity. With no outside issues involved for me. You know, that's just the way I roll. And I've been so well received any and everywhere I go that I've been doing this 22 years. I don't even trip. I walk up in the room, I'm at home. What? What? You know, that's how I don't know when that happened. I'm at home. What? And I've been to enough meetings and I roll solo enough and I've done it. What? You know, this is my house. I do a workshop on Sunday mornings, and my brother and I and a friend of ours started it in November of 1987. And this past November of 2007, we've been doing that big book workshop for 20 years. And we go through this book, through chapter 7, the 12th step, and we do it with a group of people. And we change the group every time we finish one, we start over. And this year, we're agnostics right now. And something has been changing about my conception of this power. That's interesting you would say that. Because it grows. God will change your understanding of God. If you're in here and you're new and you're looking and you're wondering and you're tripping and you listen to people come share and it be dry and you be wondering how they're going to impose this, God will improve my understanding of it. Don't even trip. That'll happen. Experiences will come and they'll shape them. You know, and what came to me is this. Why do I need a conception of God first? Why do I need a conception? That was the basic point we had when we talk about we agnostics this year. And one of the reasons I need a conception and ideas because I can't see him, I can't touch him, I can't feel him. Nobody in here can tell me they've seen him. Somebody in here might try to tell me, well, I'm cool. I know there's some people that see him. I don't. You know, and so I can't see him. So since I can't see him, I can't touch him, I can't feel him, and that's why we need a concept, because different people have different ideas about him, right? I don't need a concept to call. He's sitting here. All of us can look at him. Now, some of us might have different ideas about it. He's a handsome young man. He's debonair. He's sharp. He's looking, you know. We can see him. He's short. He's, you know, we can see him. I'm short. I like that. So I don't need a conception of God. You know, I have some ideas about it, but about this God thing, so I have to start with a conception, right? Because it's an idea, and most people have one that's been pushed on, whether you knew it or not. So I start from that basic building block, and then I start from thinking about what he ain't. In the chapter to the agnostic, it says, you know, first we ask ourselves, what do spiritual terms mean to me? What do they mean to me? And I start finding out what he ain't. What he ain't. You know, and a lot of people, when we were talking about this third step today, for myself, I found out what he's not. You know, and for me, you know, I work backwards. And I have to use ideas that come from him. Okay, I grew up in Southern Baptist, and they say God is a jealous God. I don't think jealousy is an attribute in a person. Why would it be an attribute in God? Fear God. I don't think that is an attribute in a person. To want to be feared. Why would I think that's an attribute in God? You know, so I started working backwards. And my concept is my own concept. I kind of think of God like, and I don't have him having these rules because, you know, God needs me. God don't need me on my knees for him. I get on my knees for me. I get on my knees for me. Because I like to go eye to eye and I like to think I am the power. That tells me something about myself. That I'm willingly submitting to something that's bigger and other than me. For myself. And the concept starts forming, and it starts forming from years and years and years and years and years and years. And what I learned is, he's transformational. I don't even worry sometimes about my motives. Usually I do question my motives now, but sometimes I don't even worry. He'll work with me with my defects. He's transformational. I shared a little bit of that last night. I remember I used to go to meetings, and some of the meetings I used to go to was because they had some of the finest women in the city. And when you come from them sordid places I came from, being in the company of ladies was new, and I loved it. You know, a lot of guys love going to men's meetings. I used to love going to them. No, I want to go where I see someone. But he worked with me. That's why there's men and women alcoholics, I believe, because he worked with me. And I came there to see you, but I sat there to hear him, and I listened. Started listening. I started going on panels sometime. A pretty girl asked me to go on a panel, and I went because she asked me. And he worked with me through my defects. Worked with me through that. He's transformational. Things that I usually think of as the first time, the first job I got that put me into my career before I went into real estate was by mistake. I was waiting on a job. I had an application in. And they didn't tell me yes. And I took this temporary position at this law firm. And then they offered me a permanent position. Then this job I'd been waiting on called me. And I was in a quandary. And I kept that position, and I ended up 20 years in a career I never would have thought about, because it looked like the answer was no, yes, not now, or I got something better. And the reason I have that in my mind so is because of years and years and years of doing the damn deal, doing the damn thing, doing it. And I see him in you. And you heard some of what I believe my conceptions are. You know, I believe he sits with me when I sit with you. I believe when two or more are gathered, then he shows up for me. I'm one of these people that have a hard time hearing his voice in and of myself. 22 years later, almost, I'm still not that strong on meditating and the rest. But and I'm still forming. I still feel like I'm a baby. I work with guys that I sponsor. They get mad because they want to not be a baby at three. Man, what you mean you're a baby? Man, I've been doing this 3 years. Okay, and how long were you? How old are you? I'm 50. Okay, you've been doing the other 47 years. You think that you're a veteran on this spiritual path? You know, I'm a baby on it. You know, I'm a baby on it.
Hi, my name's James. I appreciate you listening. Since all of my drinking career, or most of it, since I was aware that I needed to, I wore a mask and I've been dishonest with virtually everyone that I've met and known. So when it comes to the fourth step of making amends, how would one go about making amends, or should one make amends to everyone in their life because they've been dishonest?
Well, you said in the fourth step, and then you talked about the eighth, so I'll talk about both of them. So in the fourth step, I'm going to look at my dishonesty, which is going to be in my fourth column. And just because I've been dishonest doesn't necessarily mean I've done you harm. Sometimes I'm dishonest with myself. Sometimes I'm dishonest. So, but when I go to that eighth step and I make a list of persons I had harmed, people I had harmed, yes, I should make amends to everybody I harm whenever possible, except when to do so when injured them or others. I don't have to do make work. I don't have to do make work when you say I've been dishonest with people. You know, my brother's a lawyer, and people used to see me sometime, and still in the program, we look a lot alike. We're a year apart, and sometime I could remember in recovery, man, because that's what I was going to do all my life, and I'm older than him, and he did it, I didn't. And people would come up to me and say, man, ain't you a lawyer? And I might say, yeah, just come out my mouth. Just come out. Where's that coming? So when you say dishonest, so I've been dishonest with everybody in my life. Did I harm you? No. I don't owe you an amends. If we did that kind of make work, shit, I would never do anything else. I'd be all the life. If you're talking about all the people I've ever been dishonest to, I couldn't make you what? I'd be in store. Yeah, man, I just, you know. No. So, no. When we talk about doing them, which is, thank you, that's a great question. That's why we are sponsors, and that's what we do. Because I'll get, I will get on this path, and I will tell myself, and first, I'll either do one or two things. I won't be thorough at all, and I'll censor for myself. I'm not mad now, so I don't need to write about that. You know, I'll say it, you know. Or I'll go overboard, and I'll just add any and everybody, you know. Remember that guy that you looked at crazy? Yeah, you owe him a minute. No. I have not heard many people who go overboard wanting to make amends, though. I got to say that. That's not one you run into too often. But don't trip off that, because what that is my ego rebuilding and giving me a reason to say don't do amends. That's what that is. Because it'll tell me it is no way I can make amends, and it ain't. So it'll tell me that. But that ain't what the amends process requires, you know. Made a list of people we had harmed. We had harmed, you know. And there are lots of people I lied to and I didn't harm them. Especially if they didn't rely on what I said to go take some action. Now, if you relied on what I said, man, you a lawyer? Yeah. Oh, hey, man, well, why don't you do this case for me and pay me some money? Oh, I owe you an amends now, you know. But other than that, if I just told you, yeah, man, I'm a lawyer, you know, I just need to quit lying. Shit. You know?
Will or my will, you know, differentiating that, and, you know, do I turn it over to prayer, do I bounce it off about six guys just to get, like, you
Self-reliance and God-reliance look a lot alike. And the more reliant I am on God, the more reliant I can appear to be on myself. When Dr. Silkworth wrote, he talked about a man who was brimming with self-reliance. Because Dr. Silkworth is not one of us. So when he saw him, he was looking at Bill and he thought he was full of self-reliance. And what he really was full of was God-reliance. What he's really full of was God-reliance. And the more I do this third step and the more I turn my will and my life over, the more consistent I'm able to be. And the more I'm able to do the things that allow people to rely on me and allow me to rely on me. So self-reliance is a byproduct of God-reliance. It'll look like it. Now, if I do self-reliance without God-reliance, I'll be in collision with somebody or something. Now, the question of when am I doing God's will and when am I in my will, that's one that a lot of people ask. I don't struggle with it a lot. You know, most of the time, some people say, you know, if it's something, you know, I usually know what ain't God's will. That one is an easy one. Now, the questionable situations, what is and what isn't, I don't know, do them sometimes. You know, sometimes I, you know, okay, is this God's will that, you know, and those situations come from like good motives and stuff. And living life and living a spiritual life don't mean answers are always going to be there. Don't trip off that. The most spiritual thing I can do is I can make decisions, and I'm not scared. I'm not scared. Because sometimes being on this spiritual path will make me feel like I need to be paralyzed and make it feel like I can't. Is this what God wants me to do? You know, you and her see each other. Oh, we getting ready. Is it God's will? We get. I don't know. Should do it. Motives right? Am I doing, you know, am I doing what it is that we think we. And then, okay, does that mean that it wasn't God's will if we don't work? I don't know. You know, but on a spiritual path, to me, spiritual principles, they're not like this set of commandments, thank God, and I'm not knocking church, I'm not. But that didn't work for me. You know, I'm not trying to be on this path of commandments. Spiritual principles for me are like guardrails. They're like guardrails. You know, if you're driving a car, I don't care how well it's aligned, if you're driving without your hand on the wheel, it's going to do some, you know. It's still, life is about a series of adjustments and corrections. And what principles do is if I get too far out, I bump up against a principle. And okay, now I go back to the center. I bump up, okay, series of corrections and adjustments. You know, so it ain't like a straight path. And getting on the spiritual path, it ain't a straight jacket. But what it does allow me, I ain't scared. I make some decisions. You know, inside of recovery, I'm still a risk taker. I'm still an edge guy. You know, that's why that's why we have steps for people like me. We have amends. We have a 10th step. We have a property man, because that's how I live. You know, I'm still me inside of this program. You know, I don't know if that answered it or not, but you know, you're not going to always, it's not always a clear, especially when I'm trying as best I can. So I make a decision, should I move? Is it God's will that I move? This is my home group. I sponsor a lot of people, but here's this opportunity for me. Those kinds of things are real questions that don't always lend themselves to, is this God's will or not? I think it's God's will. Ralph, I arm you with some stuff. You my boy, go or stay. What? I got you. I always do that. The difference is, I don't say, oh, I'll get to that. No, this is what I feel like doing. And the reason why, and so I don't beat myself up, though, But also in 6 and 7, it talks about this as a lifetime practice. What separates men from the boys is the degree to which I'm trying to grow toward the perfection. You know, I'm not going to be perfect, and I don't have to accept unacceptable behavior for myself, even though I do it and I practice it. I'm a person. Sometimes we put stuff on our alcoholism that's on our humanism. We people. I suffer from human, too. I'm a person. You know, so I do stuff, and I do stuff, and I do stuff, and I do stuff. The spiritual life is not, when you talk about living it, it's new to me. You know, Michael Jordan, the greatest basketball player that ever lived, they say, I still will take Magic, but Michael Jordan, the greatest player, you know, I'm L.A., you know, and Jordan's shooting percentage, career, I'm sure wasn't over 50. So that meant he missed more than he made. But he wasn't scared. He took shots. And the reason he made them was he practiced, and 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 he still missed a lot. And in the spiritual life, I practice, and 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 I miss sometimes. And I still practice, and I practice, and I practice. God could and would, if he were what? Not found, not discovered, not analyzed, not known, not seen. God could and would if he were. It's in the seeking. It's in the seeking. It's in the seeking. I don't even trip off the fact that, oh, I'm a I'm human. I'm in life. You know, I have a strong will. A lot of willpower. Some self-will went right. Just describe me. That don't go away because I'm practicing this, but I'm practicing. That's why I got a 10. Because even when I do these others, I wouldn't need a 10 step if I wasn't going to keep falling short.
Yeah. I was wondering, what action do you take in the moment when you're getting into that morbid self-reflection or that managing and planning start of the day when it comes up?
When all else fails. When all else fails, nothing ensures immunity from drinking. And if it ensures immunity from drinking, it'll ensure immunity from a bunch of other stuff. That's the blessing. That's why I like trying to do this thing without a fellowship. It's a hard way to go. And I'm not knocking. You know, I'm a recovery guy. I'm on that side of trying. But I'm telling you, trying to do this thing without a fellowship, you know. That morbid self-reflection, I don't get to stay there alone because one of my guys is going to call me or one of you guys is going to call me. Or I got sense enough to call one of you. When I most think you need to come see about me, that's when I most need to come see about you. And when I'm in that morbid self-reflection, that's all I want. Please come see about me. And that's most when I need to come see about you. That's the antidote. It's the one that I don't want to go to sometimes. I just feel like sometime I just want to be like this for a minute, you know. I don't want to be, but it makes me feel like I want to be. That's a cold thing. When I want to isolate because I'm feeling all alone. God damn. The antidote for aloneness is isolating. You know, that's a cold one, but I understand. But that's the one. It's a lot of stuff people can say, write, pray, and the rest. But I'm going to tell you, the one that will work when nothing else will. You know, get me out myself. And it'll give me perspective. You know, sometimes you give me perspective and I'll be like, damn, I ain't so bad. Lately, I've been the one giving the perspective. Sometimes you're the one giving the perspective. I ain't so bad. Listen. Chris.
Can you talk about playing God or not playing God and your relationship with your sponsees? And with that, where that line of not playing God and responsibility lies?
That's a good one. And in sponsorship, just like in parenting, here's the deal.